Hey, everyone.
Hey, guys. So we've got kind of a more serious episode. Mm-hmm. We joke around a little bit, but we want to talk a little bit about the George Floyd situation. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys have been seeing it everywhere. You've probably even been experiencing it, you know, mm-hmm. if you've been getting involved in protests and whatnot. So me and Juan, you know, of course, being two minority bros here, we needed to actually discuss this, we felt, and give our take on things. Mm-hmm. So
here it is.
Yeah, here it is, guys. You know,
we kind of delve into a little bit of, you know, the people moralizing the situation, navigating the dialogue at this time, right. Online activism, what we can do, things that are actionable, some propositions by certain politicians, who would be good leaders.
Yeah.
Things like that. If you're interested in taking our opinion about this situation, then by all means, stick around.
Yeah, guys. And of course, you know, please continue to like, subscribe, comment on our channel. If you're not subscribed yet, guys, make sure to subscribe and also hit the bell.
Yep.
Check out the website, eigenbros.com, the Twitter, at eigenbros, Instagram at eigenbros, and then TikTok, eigenbros2. And we'll see you guys in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, guys. We have a interesting episode today.
Yes. I feel like we have to address the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm. I think should undress.
I know. I you can obviously tell where my mind is.
You dirty boy.
Yeah, we have to address the things that are happening in this country because I think it's while there has been a historic week for a number of things. It's mm-hmm. also been, yeah, I guess we're living through a moment of moment in history.
Yeah, I guess we can address that a little bit. So,
kind of recap, right? What I mean by that, like SpaceX launched a private,
yes,
first time a private industry has launched a rocket, right?
Right, right. So SpaceX, we got Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley, the two astronauts, first guys, commercial crew. Mission, all thanks to SpaceX and NASA. Mm-hmm. And it was a successful mission. We actually did a podcast on this that won't be released because it was a little bit shaky, but we will release it on Patreon. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be the podcast for this week, of course, if you're watching.
Yeah.
But we talked a little bit more about SpaceX, but this one we want to focus more about George Floyd today.
George Floyd and the actions preceding George Floyd. I've kind of, you know, as scientists, you kind of take a step back and try to collect as much information as possible before at least kind of jumping to a conclusion about things or even making a statement on anything. And I don't know if you saw this, but I certainly saw a lot of people just kind of, you know, putting one foot forward and then taking two steps back sometimes. And just constant like battling on Facebook or whatever. And I don't even like going on Facebook because it's like,
it's a cesspool. I haven't been on there in months. I don't even know what's on my Facebook anymore.
Yeah, man. I guess for those of you that aren't American listeners, there was an incident in the U.S. in Minnesota by Minneapolis police. They went ahead and used excessive force on a gentleman named George Floyd, and they applied pressure to an area in his neck, and it pretty much asphyxiated him, and it killed him. So,
yeah, 8 minutes and 38 seconds of pressure on his carotid artery.
Yeah,
of course the private autopsy showed that that was his cause of death.
Yeah,
even though the the other public autopsy, the public autopsy said, oh, he died of natural causes and apparently because of the other drugs potentially in his system.
Potentially, just
that kind of shit. If that doesn't make you cynical, then I don't know. I can.
I don't. Yeah, if this isn't already making you cynical about the whole system, it's just. I went ahead and commented because being a person of color, I think you and I are kind of just like, yeah, well, duh, like we have a stake in this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we have to have a stake in this.
Yeah, we have to.
Yeah.
As much as I'd like to not, I usually try not to get too involved with this area. It's not because, you know, I'm trying to be, a coward.
You're not trying to assimilate it either.
I do want to assimilate.
No, but you don't, Terrence.
But what do you mean assimilate?
You don't have this assimilation fetish of, like, fetishizing, like, whiteness. You know
True.
What I'm saying?
But I'm not going to, I don't want to disparage white people or anything like that or non-black, but, I try not to get too involved just because I'm not really a guy into like social issues as much publicly. And I'm not really that into politics in general.
Mm-hmm.
Although I am into it, I just don't like to.
We had a conversation about this.
It's a little bit annoying to
your methodology. You disagree with the methodology of using politics for social change. I think is what the crux of your.
I don't disagree with it. It's just not my area of expertise.
But it's also not your methodology. You also said that you would approach it in a different. You would approach social progress in a different way.
That's what
way.
I mean. I'm not, but that doesn't mean I don't think it's useful.
Right, right.
I think it's just not my area.
Yeah.
It's not my center of focus. So yeah. I'm more of a scientific guy, a physics guy, I like business and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So of course I need to be into politics and everything, you know, entrepreneurship mm-hmm. like that. But it's kind of not my wheelhouse, so I tend to stay away from it. And I also don't think it's that much, since it's not my wheelhouse, I don't get much use out of it. Mm-hmm. So I tend to stay away from it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I am. I'm a complete 180 from Terrence.
Yeah.
I got into politics very early on, especially with the Obama election. And ever since then, I kind of wore that hat. And then Trump got elected, and then I decided to take that hat off and said, I don't know anything about politics anymore.
Right. But weirdly enough, I think we're both interested in politics probably about the same.
And I'm telling you, now I am. I was a bleeding heart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I
wore it on my sleeve. And I just became entirely way too cynical because of Trump. So, but yeah,
because I've been cynical is why I don't like politics, because I see so many flaws in trying to actually be political.
Yeah.
The only way you can really do politics, I think, and actually accomplish anything is to actually be in it. And since I'm not in it, I'm kind of just always a bystander. I don't really like being a bystander because, I mean, I like pontificating and all that stuff. I mean, we're a podcast, so obviously we're pontificators to the fucking extreme. But, you know, when I'm trying to do active, when I care about things that I really want to change, I like to do things. Like, I always focus on trying to do them now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because and that's probably because of also it's not something that comes natural to me as much. So my first thought is to what can I actually do to make a change?
How can I solve this problem?
Yeah, how can I solve this problem? You know, that's a typical physicist mindset, I would say. Except, you know, now I'm actually trying to apply that to things outside of science.
Simple systems like objects. The thing is, human beings aren't objects. They're driven by their own motivations. And
right.
And and it's hard to motivate people to care. Like it's taking riots all over the country. It's, you know, to have the country realize that there's a problem. Like there's a problem with police brutality, making police accountable for murder pretty much.
But wouldn't you say, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, Juan, but just for the audience, wouldn't you say though that the police, like most of the country, did recognize this as a problem beforehand?
Yeah. I think the country kind of, you have a perfect storm right now. I think this is, I mentioned that, you know, with the unemployment and everything, people being out of work and just being in quarantine for 3 months, it's making a perfect storm of, or a powder keg or whatever, to incite civil unrest like this. Like it took the death of George Floyd, because everybody was at home watching this happen on Twitter, on Facebook, being shared, and then people were like, holy shit, like this is still happening. Like somebody said this as a joke, but they were like, oh, the cops are the only ones deciding to what did they say? They said something like, there's, the cops are the only ones that wanted to regain some normalcy, so they decided to kill.
Oh, like, yeah.
We were, yeah, it was some offhand, like.
I think it was on Tiger Belly.
Yeah, I think maybe.
Okay, yeah.
Because I really don't know where it's from.
Okay.
But, like, they just said, yeah, they wanted to regain some normalcy, so they decided to kill
or no, it was on,
Black Man. Don't say it.
What?
Don't say it, because
why?
Let it this out.
Okay.
But yeah, it was just like they just, but it's true. Like the cops almost wanted to. The cops decided it was okay to continue this, and it just, yeah, it's just a extremely upsetting. It's almost like tone deaf. You know what I mean? Just like continuing on this path, and I think people are just fucking tired of it, man. Just tired of the police brutality. Tired of like the. The killings, that there's too many, one too many, to be honest.
We've reached an apex for sure.
Yeah.
We've reached an apex for sure. This was the, as you said, the perfect storm.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I tend to agree. Of course, you know, going along with the same theme of, you know, what are we going to do about it? You know, I've been, I don't know if for those of you who follow the Twitter, I've kind of been posting. I've been posting about this situation in no scientific concept pretty much for like the last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Maybe more. I can't remember. I think for the last few days, whatever it may be. And I posted some questions on there that I had. And in particular, I've been wondering, like, where's the leadership here? Who's leading the charge, and what are the actionable plans in this situation?
Yeah.
This is one thing I'm kind of scared of with this whole movement is, you know, we've seen this with Black Lives Matter already, which gives me a little bit pause for why these guys are now trying to take this up.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've already shown that they failed to do anything in most
You're saying
other
in terms
situations.
Of what, policy?
In terms of getting anything done. Like, we've saw the Black Lives Matter movement, I believe, when it was Trayvon Martin's killing. I'm not sure if that was them, though. Can you refresh
it? It was around that time, I think.
Yeah, I think that was the resurgence, or that was the birth of the Black Lives Matter movement. But to me,
BLM's been around since the Obama era. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've been around for a while.
I remember being aware of their presence around the Trayvon Martin situation.
Yeah.
And I remember nothing happening when they were taking the
mantle. The thing is, I think the leader, I think D-Ray was the one that was kind of leading the charge at the moment. I haven't heard
D-Ray
from him.
D-Ray Davis?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
I don't know.
Comedian?
No, not that D-Ray. Oh. Some other D-Ray. I forget his last name.
Okay.
Or maybe that was his last name. I don't remember. But he disappeared. I think he got kind of like crucified or got caught in the crossfire about something. And the thing is, like, I agree with you. I think there should be leaders. I think we should harken back to the civil rights era for something like this, and like take a look in the history books. I mean, it's not even that far away. It's 50 years ago. Right. Oh no, 60.
Just
I guess.
Think back a little bit.
Yeah, think back. Ask your grandma. Like, you know what I mean? It's not even that far of a time, but. Look at the way MLK did things, and look at the way leaders at that moment or at that time, even intellectual leaders, you know, I think, you know, you look at the two people or two Black leaders, at least, cornerstones to civil rights are Malcolm X and MLK.
Yeah.
Junior. And so, looking at those two, and that's not to say that there aren't any more. There are definitely more. It's just these two are the ones that are popularized.
They're the quintessential.
We should have figures like that again.
Yeah. I'm always thinking, though, is it possible now? Because it just seems like... what was I trying to say? What's my point here? So
you think that it's like they're... People are going to attack him. He's going to, or she, or people are going to attack this person that comes up as a leader and say they did something like.
Well, this is the thing. I think leadership, you're always going to be under attack. You know, that's one of the things you sign up for being a leader. Mm-hmm. You're basically taking the brunt of all the shit, basically, right? The thing is, I don't think you can force someone to be a leader, though. So if a leader is to emerge, it has to happen naturally. And I think one of the reasons why MLK in particular was able to come to power was because he kind of already had the training to be a leader for most of his life, right? He was literally a reverend who commanded, you know, a whole church, and a black church, of course. So he was very prominent within the black community already. So when you already have that kind of positioning within a community, it's very easy for you to take up the mantle, or easier to take up the mantle. I'm just not sure how connected people are with black communities and whatnot these days, because we are kind of more, we're kind of distant nowadays.
Well, I think, what are you trying to say distant? Are you trying to mean like you've black Americans have moved up the social hierarchy in the class sense, like where it's just like, oh, you're a lot more in suburban circles and you're a lot more integrated in those classes, or what?
I think that's one thing, but I think it's also the fact that with MLK's day, it was actually in person. You know, people actually would go to his church, see him. He would give back to the community in person. These days, the world is so big and we're so disconnected in some way physically, because we have things like the internet, we have things like telephone, we have all this type of communication. I don't know if it's as easy to rally people in person.
Yeah.
That's an excuse though, because I think it could be done.
Yeah.
I think, and
especially also, now.
Yeah.
No one has jobs.
Right. Right. I would actually also, call back to my Twitter again. I said, So we already have black institutions and minority institutions, right? Mm-hmm. I said basically something along the lines of, you know, where is the NAACP's statement on this? They might have one, but like, why is it not trending? Why am I not hearing everyone speaking about it? Where's the ACLU on this? So like, I feel like these people should be at the front and center of this issue. All I keep seeing is people protesting. You know, you'll see people throwing bottles in the street, or maybe even peaceful protests, people just walking or marching. But it's like, I'm not seeing anything about what is going to be done. What's the call to action? Who are the leaders of this or of these things? Where are the big hitters in this? I'm not seeing anything about that.
I think right now we're at the point where I think they're figuring it out. I think you'll see it in the coming months, because I presume this isn't going to end for some time, because the system is doubling down, if you haven't noticed. System is fighting instead of actually, you know, taking action to put away cops that are murdering people. They're actually defending them and defending the system as it stands, which should tell you something, right? It's a little bit disappointing. It's very disappointing, the response that I'm seeing from the government in response to this. And I get that it's, some of it is a response to looting, but some of it is also instigation from the police as well.
Sure. I mean, you literally Trump tweet when the looting starts, the shooting starts.
Yeah, but it's also like, you see video on Twitter of local departments. And this is in Minnesota specifically, where they had dump trucks put bricks out for protesters, and they were just to kind of instigate them to destroy property.
Right.
So they could double down on the efforts of calling in the National Guard, the absurdity of it, the tactics of it are grimy and ugly, and there's so many things that you can criticize the response for, but it's almost, I kind of refrain from using language like this is good and this is bad, because it's a sort of cause and effect. It's almost like I was saying, a powder keg, right? You don't blame the powder keg. You don't blame
when it's got fire set to it, right? You don't blame it for exploding.
The cop who killed George Floyd, he's the guy who lit the keg.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I agree 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like people want to, I think it's a lot of times it's a racist type people who want to divert the issue to saying, oh, it's, but they're looting.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, come on. There's always going to be people who are opportunists. Yeah. There's always going to be people who just, you know, loot for the sake of it. And even, if they were looting, it's like, this is a response out of anger now.
Yeah.
So now what is going to be done about this?
Yeah.
It's sidestepping the real issue.
Exactly.
And trying to make it about something else.
Yeah.
So that shows to me that you're probably, you're not on the same page.
Yeah.
But
I think the leaders will come out in due time. I think they're figuring it out now, especially if and when this continues in terms of the efforts of the government, you know, responding to police brutality by adding more police brutality, there will be people that will come out and actually become figures in this. You know, this is a time for you real social justice warriors to really put on your social justice warrior caps.
Right, let's start doing shit, you SJWs.
This is the real cause. This is the real cause that I think, you know, that those people that are self-proclaimed, I guess, social justice people.
Right. I want to see all these people always so outspoken actually do something.
And it's the thing, like I get online activism. Like I get that we almost have to do online activism because we're still in quarantine. You know what I mean?
True.
It's almost like, but at the same time, go out there and do something about it. If you're really passionate about this, vote conscionably, vote with, you know, with these things in mind. Specifically, I want to say that you said, where are the leaders at? Julian Castro, he's a former mayor in San Antonio. Shout out to Countdown City. He was running for president of Democratic Party, and he put out a tweet 5 days ago proposing certain things. He said we should end qualified immunity, and qualified immunity is a doctrine that pretty much gives police immunity for certain things. So the scenario is if they feel like their life is in danger, mm-hmm. right? Or if they're in a scenario where they feel like they're in danger, like the gentleman who, rest his soul, he was pulled over and he was killed because the cop felt scared because the gentleman had, he was a licensed gun owner. You remember?
But he had a gun on him or?
No, the cops didn't know. And so one cop was like calm, but the other one was scared and he shot him with his kid and his the mother
like
in the car.
Was he like brandishing a weapon?
No.
Because he was a gun owner.
Because he was a gun owner.
How would he know that though?
Because you look up the license.
And he shot him just because of that?
He was in his car and the guy said he got scared. He feared for his life and that was his defense.
Wow, that sounds bullshit to me.
And to kill the guy in front of his partner and his kid in the back.
Right. Jesus.
Black male in his early 30s, I think. Just the craziest thing. We need to talk about ending qualified immunity. That's the first proposition. He said, establish a national use of force standard.
Force standard?
What do you think that means? Because he didn't expand on this.
Can you read it one more time?
Establish a national use of force standard. Use of force standard. Like police, right? So,
I see. Maybe it's just you need better guidelines on the use of force. So basically, police have the license to kill and to use force. All right? Excessive force, I don't know if that's actually something they're allowed to do. I guess the term excessive means it's over the top. So you want to not have excessive force.
Right.
So I guess to establish a national standard for force is to make it so that the guidelines are very clear on what force entails.
Yeah.
So maybe now with situations like where Floyd underwent with that cop, kneeling on someone's neck can be a new standard added as this is not to do in a situation of policing. Right. So now you can have more well-defined parameters. So when you work more finely within those parameters, within those guidelines, then it's much easier to prosecute someone when they work outside of those guidelines and it's considered excessive force.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good way to start, I would say. So yeah. It's good there's somebody who actually is providing some solutions, but we need more people saying that.
Yeah. Like
more
like,
people agreeing upon these solutions.
And unfortunately, this tweet, which has plenty more propositions, by the way, only has 4,000 retweets.
Mm.
Yeah. Out of his base that is 491,000 followers.
Oh, wow.
Only 4,000 decided to basically, how would you say?
Retweet it.
Retweet it, yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing he proposed that I think is kind of interesting is creating a database of decertified officers.
Decertified. What does that mean?
Well, I guess the certification process where, like, for instance, I think the cop who killed George Floyd, he was
up for renewal.
He was involved. No, he was involved in he was kicked out of different police groups.
Mm.
For I think also killing some other minorities. Like,
yeah, I know he
this guy
killed
was,
somebody.
This guy is just—he's a licensed serial killer. You shouldn't.
Yeah.
You shouldn't hire somebody like that in your police
force. Right.
You just shouldn't.
Once you start going down that pathway, then you're done.
And demilitarize police. For if that isn't an obvious statement to you, then yeah. I'm sorry. Promote alternatives to 911. And federally investigate all fatal police shootings.
Mm.
So I think an interesting thing is how we frame how you put this in the language of the oppressors, right? So a lot of the time, if you're speaking to conservatives who I'm going to call them bootlickers, no, but if you speak to certain people that are for the militarized response or the crackdown to these riots, you can say the George Floyd incident was a breach of his Sixth Amendment right. And if for those of you that don't recall what the Sixth Amendment is,
I don't.
A lot of people don't. Don't worry about it.
Right to a speedy trial?
No, it's dang it. Hold on. I don't want to butcher this.
Sure, take your time.
It guarantees dang, Terrence, you got it.
Oh, nice.
Guarantees a citizen a speedy trial, a fair jury, an attorney if the accused person wants one, and the chance to confront the witnesses who's accusing the defendant of a crime. So you have a right to that as a U.S. citizen. You have a right to know
right.
what you're being charged with and to be tried for it. The thing is, a lot of these people like George Floyd, a lot of Black Americans that have been in these situations, they're not even charged with something. They just go right to the death penalty. And it's like,
yeah.
It's like, this is unconstitutional. This should not be a thing that the judicial branch should gloss over or the United States Attorney General should just not address. This should be addressed every time a cop kills a civilian.
Well, here's the thing. That one's a little bit irrelevant, I think, in some sense. And I've talked to you about that a little bit, the right to a speedy trial, because I see what you're saying. You're saying that basically the cop that killed Floyd is basically being judged, jury, and executioner, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, though, that is something that I don't know if you can easily prove.
What do you mean?
That he is undertaking himself as judge, jury, and executioner.
No, but my point is that this man who's wearing a badge, a state agent, is superseding, in some sense, federal law that says the man that you are accusing of something, you're bypassing the trial part by killing him.
Mm-hmm.
You did something unconstitutional. On a federal level, you should have committed a federal crime. That should be a federal offense to kill somebody without doing all that. That's pretty much what murder is.
So basically,
right?
you would have to prove then that he is taking the role of the executioner.
Sure. But more importantly, he's literally taking away that right for George Floyd.
But
see what I'm saying?
That's a little shaky because cops do have to kill sometimes, right?
Yeah, and you could say that in moments of self-defense. Like if there's a clear and
present
danger.
Well, sometimes not even self-defense. Think about hostage situations. Sometimes you have to assassinate the guy after the hostage is in trouble, right?
Yeah, but those are extreme examples.
Yeah,
those are limiting cases.
But those, I don't know if you can necessarily say that in some sense, because those are situations in which force is necessary to use.
Yeah,
but I guess so I guess Floyd's situation
is excessive. These are points where they're.
You're saying it's excessive force.
Because the people who are being peaceful don't deserve this treatment.
Right,
like if there's a violent situation where there's hostages and stuff, yeah, you can say there are conditions that require, you know, a jury should be able to look at that situation and say, yeah, mm-hmm. that use of force was
excessive.
Permissible.
Okay. Oh, permissible. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, so
you know what I'm saying? Like if you were in that jury and they say a cop shot a civilian in a bank heist, would you be like, the cop probably was, you know, accidentally probably shot the person?
It would depend though. Because I'm like, why is a cop John Wayne in a bank like?
But this is why the jury process is important. Like this is why the system is built this way. It should.
Yeah.
You know, there are reasons why. My point is that if you want to put this in the framework of somebody who, especially if you're talking to conservative people, you can tell them that this is a clear violation of their Bill of Rights. You know what I'm saying? And if they even care to be constitutionalists, I guess. But if they don't, then, I mean, all hope is lost, I guess. You really don't know what you can do then. But I think another thing I wanted to point out was... The activism online thing. I kind of want to comment on that.
What is it?
The activism online.
Activism online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's your take on it?
So, do you mean like, are you saying like social justice warriors online?
No. Just like if you see like within the Terrence is in charge of our Twitter.
You're saying like in the science community and whatnot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I was. Before we got cut off a little bit by trying to wait for the noise to die down a little bit, I was saying that basically this situation has really shown me how solid the content creators and the people that I follow are. I've been impressed by the number of people that have actually been speaking out about this issue and who have been trying to do something or use their particular talents to create or, you know, at least try to say something about this situation. I think it's shown the best and best and worst of people. And it seems to be an overwhelming best on our end. Or at least for the Eigen Bros sphere, we'll say.
Yeah.
You know, from all the content creators that I've seen, like just shouting some out. You know, we've seen Dylan Berger, of course, speaking out about this. Seen Sean Carroll, seen Eric Weinstein talking about this. You know, we've got, you know, even people like Dave Superpowers from MBTI, you know, and then some other people we had in the podcast like Diana Lee. Just all the good people that we know have been saying things. Jabril's. You know, all those people have been saying positive things and been trying to actively voice their concerns about this issue. And I think it's been a good showing of, you know, where the community that we are in stands.
Yeah.
So I got to say props and major respect to all the people out there who've been doing something.
Yeah, who've been voicing at least their opinions about the situation.
And honestly, it's inspired me to actually say something because I was more reluctant to say things. Because usually with these situations, I kind of like to see where things are, to see the general atmosphere, because sometimes I get surprised. You know, I think generally most people are good about these situations. People do good, but, you know, I kind of like to take in the information fully first.
Yeah.
You know, see what the full situation is, and then I like to act. And seeing all those people actually jump on it and be really vocal about their opinions on these things at the cost of, you know, followers even,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, their own channels, it's allowed me to come out and say things, you know, on our behalf a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And then to do this podcast.
Yeah, I do want to thank those people. I think there's a little bit of a... I don't want to just look at online activism and say, like, all right, that's enough for today kind of thing. It's good to get, especially if you're an influencer or whatever, meaning that you have a following of people and you can influence people's thoughts and opinions, you should speak out on this event.
Yeah, I think it's important.
It's important.
Especially when it's a human rights thing, you know?
Yeah. And
it's not politics at this point. It's beyond politics.
It is. And I made a post about this a couple days ago. I posted on my Instagram. It was about James Baldwin and one of his quotes that basically said, to be a Negro in this country or to be black in this country and to be slightly conscious of your surroundings is to be basically in anger all the time or be upset all the time. Do you kind of agree with that, Terrence? If, as a society says, you're black. So
I am a black indeed.
Yeah.
So I don't agree. I do agree and I don't.
Okay.
So for me, I thought, I think that's very true. It depends really on your mindset. You know, I think you can be angry about a lot of things. And, you know, of course, when you see how much society
marginalizes?
Well, not marginalizes, but how much society is not structured for you in particular.
Well, that's what I mean, marginalizing.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, you're...
Maybe it's just not the word I want to use at this time, but yeah, you're probably understanding what I'm saying. So, yeah. Like, you know what, being a black male in society, you're going to run into things that are not normal or natural to your state of being, and, you know, you're going to see things and
not normal to
things.
Your culture, you're saying.
I wouldn't say culture because it's beyond culture. Mm-hmm. Culture is something that I think is like a malleable thing in some sense. Mm-hmm. I think it's more just like it's deeper than that.
Like in what way? Like would you say like in what way? Yeah, I'm interested.
I have to think. It's just little things, you know. Like how you have to act. Let's say for one, I saw a guy on Twitter.
I was going to make a joke.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, the post office, they should probably open at 11 a.m. instead of 7 a.m. as a person of color who struggles exactly. with time, I get it.
No, but I'm saying, like, you know, you got the guys on Twitter. One guy I saw on Twitter was saying how he felt like he had to always be perfect in a sphere of, like, let's say, like, in physics in particular. He's a PhD guy saying he's entering a new field that's, like, you know,
dominated.
Less than 1% black, of course.
Yeah.
It's like the same as, you know, like, even in our program, and maybe not in our program, but
I mean, it's still the professors are predominantly white.
But we have two. Old. We have two, at least, that are black.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's 1%. But you know what I'm saying. So
it's probably a small fraction.
Yeah. But it's like you have this overwhelming feeling of you have to always be perfect in every sense, without people looking, because otherwise they're going to look down upon you, and then they will ascribe it to your race.
Exactly.
And then now you are misrepresenting your entire race, essentially. Yeah. So you feel like you're constantly an ambassador in all sense.
Yeah.
So
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah,
That's my
I'm sure you definitely
too.
Know, for sure. Yeah. Hispanic people got to deal with the same bullshit. But
yeah,
it's like, yeah, that's the kind of thing is what I'm talking about. There's subtle things that always are, that you always kind of have to deal with. And that can manifest into anger. And I think that definitely did for me when I was younger. But I think over time, I started to embody more of I started to see it more as a comedy. Mm-hmm. Less anger, and it turned more into funny to me. So when I get in situations like that, they're mostly comedic to me now, more so than angry. Because I feel like anger can consume you in a way that pushes you towards a demented or almost a...
like a state of psychosis in a way? Because you constantly see the system is against you and...
You can get very disillusioned and jaded to the point of where... You you get a very toxic or just a very abnormal perception of things, because now you're living in a living hell, essentially.
Yeah.
So you don't want
to being oppressed on all.
Yeah.
From
you don't want to put yourself sides. In a hell.
Yeah.
A hellscape means that you can do crazy things to try to escape your hell. So,
like a mental hell, you're giving, yeah. you're ascribing things.
Yeah.
There was this podcast that I was listening to that discussed this. It was a round table of four black intellectuals, and they were mm-hmm. just like saying, yeah, how do you ascribe blackness or the black experience and stuff in America? And a lot of them were saying, well, you don't want to have this mindset where you could walk, like, how do you, cause they have children. And so they're like, how do I want to raise my children? Do I want to raise my children being woke in that sense, like being woke to racism? And when is it appropriate to cast the veil from their eyes and say, the system mm-hmm. is not built for you and things like that. And, or should they go through the world not knowing that systemic racism is a problem and let them figure it out on their own, in a sense, if they encounter it? Because, like, the people who know that racism exists, you know, like you and I, we probably, I certainly don't go in the world thinking every inconvenience or every, like, every time a white person makes a slight comment at me or something, that it's due to racism or you know what I mean? I try to walk to the world giving the people the benefit of the doubt, but
yeah, I do as well. I think
but that's
so.
Probably the healthiest way. I would personally lose my mind.
Yeah, I think small anger turns into big anger.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful in that. And also it's like, you know, sometimes you don't even know if it's racist. Like, you know, I think people can get caught up in saying that everything is racist, especially if you have that perception. Mm-hmm. But like being a scientist, of course, like, you know, we've had the luxury to experience how many times your intuition is wrong as fuck, you know? So when you're constantly shitted on by the universe because you think something might be the way it is and then it's really not.
Yeah.
And it runs counter to your intuition. We're constantly being tested in that realm. So we have experience also now, or a refined understanding, that your intuition is not always right. So like, if you're really not sure that something is racist, let's say, you know, a good quote is, never attribute to malice what can easily be attributed to stupidity.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times it's just ignorance, or, you know, people are just genuinely don't know something or whatever. So for me, it's very easy now to not think of things as, you know, this is racist per se. It's just like, you don't know, so it's just chalked up to, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be comfortable with living in the uncertainty.
Otherwise, it's weighed on your mind that, you know, that the whole, when I was younger, I struggled with this too, because it's kind of like, how do you navigate the world where it's constantly oppressing you? Or if, like, if you look at the world in that paradigm.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's...
Well, then you become a victim.
Well, it did that's that too, but it just makes you feel like the psychological effects of victimhood are, like, well, for one, trauma, obviously, but then, you know, they manifest itself in mental health problems, right? It's just like, you don't feel like you have any power.
Right.
And the thing is, you do have power. You should feel like you have power. You should, you are powerful, like, kind of thing. I'm going to turn this to a teaching moment, you know? Believe in yourself. You know?
It's so true. As cliche as it sounds, though, I gotta admit, man, I think it's so true. I think a lot of times, especially minorities, can get trapped into that victim mentality. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you as an individual are so much more powerful than you believe.
Hold on. But we are, let's just say this. I want to clarify. We are victims, but of circumstance. It shouldn't necessarily be that you are powerless. You should... You know what I'm saying? You should, like you're saying, you're more powerful than you think you are.
Yes, yes. Do not get caught up in the victimhood mentality. You have to be able to see that you have power, you have the ability to change things. It only takes one person to make a giant change.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to also take on responsibility and take the mantle up. You know, like, if the system is not the way you want it to be, change it. You know, what are you going to do about it? What's the next step to fix something?
Yeah.
You know, it can be really easy to get caught up into saying, well, you know, like,
Like a defeatist sort of.
Yeah, defeatist attitude. Of like, well, I guess I can't do anything about this, or like, you know, what can I do? I'm just one guy.
Yeah.
You know, one person is very strong.
Yeah.
One person is very strong and one person is very influential.
Yeah.
You know, there are many, many things you can do. And, it, you know, it doesn't have to be a giant, it doesn't have to be a giant change overnight. You know, one small change can be a domino effect towards something bigger. Mm-hmm. So you always have to be pushing and you always have to be constantly trying to do things to change your situation if you believe you're in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, That's why I really am focused and hell-bent on trying to figure out what are the plans here? What are the steps we're actually going to be taking? Because nothing changes if you don't do anything.
Yeah, and the next coming months, the response to this is going to be it's almost like the task of our generation to really start this decade in a direction that's going to be of change, be a positive change.
I hope. Right? I hope. I get worried that our generation is caught in the
online activism.
Yeah, I think my sense right now, I don't know how accurate it is, but my sense is that our generation is a bit lost in how to act. Mm-hmm. I think we're really good at complaining and whining and, you know, saying what shouldn't be, but like what is it that we're doing? What are we going to do about it? Do we have a sense? Can we actually foster a sense of organization, a sense of coherency, a plan?
That truly,
I'm not seeing any plans anywhere.
That truly is our weakness.
It is a very big, big weakness
for our generation because we're you know, I'm talking about millennials, even the Zoomers, like that are now in their early 20s. Y'all are at the prime age to really start making a difference and, you know, going out there and being actionable. Right? Like it's one thing to collect information. Obviously information gives you power and enables you to, how would you say, to like defend your positions and have principles and yada, yada, yada. But like Terrence is saying, being actionable and making these thoughts into things are what's more important. They're going to affect you in the real world. We constantly live in an online world that is fabricated, that is not real. Like online is not real.
Your tweet is not saving lives. Okay?
For the most part, no. It might.
It could. Yeah, I won't diminish it completely, but like, you got to do stuff. Like as much as we like to shit on boomers and like, oh, they're out of touch and old. It's like all of my parents and their friends and all of them, they vote. They do things in politics. They actually do real things. All of them are doing things. This is why they have all the power and control. Yeah. They're doing shit. We're on Twitter and not doing anything. It's like, this is why. It's like, of course, you know, there's other factors, but it's like, if you want to learn something from boomers, look at the moves that they make and how much shit that they actually take seriously. Like the census. My mom is constantly telling me about the census.
Yeah.
You know, voting, you know, when I did the primaries here, last year, I think.
Yeah.
It was amazing, astonishing to me how much the physicists just did not give a fuck. Like, none of the millennial people even cared about the primaries. I was having to round up people to go vote. And none of them would have even voted, probably, if it wasn't for me actually trying to go there and do something.
Yeah, same for me. I do mail-in ballots. Luckily, our state does mail-in ballots. So I was like, of course. Like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to investigate and do this. But there are very few of us that actually.
Yeah. It was astonishing to me to how no one cared.
And you're already
so lackadaisical.
Sorry, I think I redlined.
That's okay.
You're already a guy who's already cynical. I'm cynical too, but
I'm cynical as fuck, man.
But the thing is, like, the fact that we're doing what we feel like is the bare minimum.
Yeah.
In some sense, right? To be socially responsible, or be socially just to our generation and stuff like that, and the societal problems that are facing us.
Right.
We're doing the voting is the bare minimum.
Voting matters, guys. I mean, as much as we like to say, oh, it doesn't fucking matter. You want to be cool and dismiss this shit. No, all parties are the same. It's like,
okay.
You know, if your voice is not heard, I mean, your actions are everything.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say this on a federal level. Okay. Like, you can be mad at the Democratic Party or whatever party you ascribe to because they didn't pick your candidate. But on local elections, this shit matters more. That you have more of an impact on the local level by orders of magnitude.
But every level counts.
But every level does count.
You know, all you have is your word. All you have is your voice.
Yeah.
Let your voice be heard. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a tiny little fucking mouse squeak, you know, amongst a giant ravine. It's like you have to try to make yourself heard in some sense. All you have is your actions.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's all you have. You know, nothing else is going to matter unless you don't do anything.
And the positions that you might want to look into voting for are actually like judges in your city.
Mm-hmm. Senators too.
Senators. But more importantly, if you're looking at criminal justice, definitely the judges, the circuit court judges. I don't know if they're state appointed. Are they Senate? I don't know. Might depend on the municipality and whatever the state. But for the most part, you want to elect your local judges, your sheriffs. You know, if you have a choice, I know some municipalities or counties, you can vote for your police chief, I think.
Not sure. Probably.
I'm not sure. Maybe.
I can't remember all the voting. There's a bunch of things.
There's so many. But that's what I'm saying. Like you have power. The thing is, you don't know you have power. So.
Right. At least if you do it too, it's on record. So let's say if there is some tampering or some bullshit going around,
yeah,
you can at least check the record, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. Oh, and don't forget that some states have close primaries.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you have to declare your party.
That's an important thing that I figured out the hard way.
Yeah, some states, if you're for those of you that are in the states, I know that Europe probably has a little bit more of a fair system, but in the states that's set up to be where you have to declare your party affiliation before you can actually vote for the nominee in that party or whatever.
Right, so you can't be an independent and then vote for a Republican, let's say, if you... If you in
like
the primaries,
if you like a Republican guy who's going to be a decent tax collector or something,
right?
You can't vote for that guy. You have to
vote for an independent only, and then there's like one guy on the list.
So and some like, guy's cat or something.
Yeah. So closed primaries, watch out for that for sure. I learned that the hard way. I was like, I'm going to be an independent. Like I don't care about the party. I want to see the person and the rationality behind
them.
But then sure enough, I went to the voting and that was like one guy on the list who I'd never heard of. I'm like, all right, Steve, I guess you're the vote I have to give it to.
Yeah. And this is also why you should maybe at least advocate for some people argue against open primaries. I'm for open primaries because they offer more selection and variety in your politics. But also, mail-in ballots are also important because I think the action of voting, going out and voting is and waiting in line is built in to your – it's almost like it's done on purpose so you won't want to go wait in line. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's an inconvenience.
Right, right.
Yeah, it is. I'm not going to slight any of this. All this is inconvenient. Like doing all this is you want to minimize the amount of effort you put into this. Go out, get mail-in ballots, all that stuff. If you can, it's going to make your life easier. It's going to give you a better quality.
And also we're the millennial tech generation. I mean, guys, we got to get good at some of this stuff early so that we can actually change some of this dumb shit. Still marking person ballots. And when we can easily just do this online, like, let's start changing some shit.
I know it's like everything.
It's
like everything is encrypted. How do you? Why do you care? How do you? I'm just like, how do you? Like, if you actually have the technology, I think boomers have this weird thing where they think that
being in person is going to make it
more secure. Yeah, I'm like, things are encrypted.
We have bank accounts. Yeah, online, we can do it. There's ways to do
I'm
this.
Just like, dude, what the hell? This is absurd. Like,
right. We can figure this shit out, guys. Get involved. We need to start taking up the mantle of politics. I know it fucking sucks, especially we're a science channel. We know that most of you guys don't give a shit about politics.
But you're at least intelligent, okay? Yeah. You at least have a depth of knowledge. You investigate. You're critical. You know these are all good things. These are all good qualities to have. So please apply that to your systems and your institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So be against oppression. you know. That's the minimum, please.
Yeah, yeah. cool.
But yeah, and I mean, I guess I don't know if there's anything else you kind of wanted to touch upon.
Yeah, I guess we're getting close to the wire, so I wanted to just, I guess maybe we can close out here. I wanted to ask you some questions.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
So, one, of course, I've been saying this is kind of the theme I've been running with is what the fuck are we going to do? What's a plan that you could put forth? What do you think are some actionable, pragmatic, and real moves we can make within these next few weeks? And actually, if you can, and that could be anything. You can make it broad for the audience. You can make it for the supposed leaders out there who should be doing something. Like, what should we do? What's the plan?
I think at least having a national conversation about ending qualified immunity, and like a little bit about what this is before I found out that Julian Castro said this, but the three main things I would say: ending qualified immunity, investigating police killings of civilians federally. I'm saying, did I say federally? I wanted to highlight that.
No, but yeah.
Yeah, because
it's basically what Julio's list had.
Somewhat, yeah. And then demilitarizing the police. I think those are three actionable things that are going to be very important. But most importantly, we should have a national conversation about the ending qualified immunity, because that's what's allowing the cops to get away with, the bad cops or the few bad apples, quote unquote, to get away with murder, essentially.
Who would be involved in that conversation?
The Attorney General of the United States. Hopefully not Trump. Trump doesn't need to be involved.
Yeah, I think we should probably try to keep Trump out of stuff as much as possible.
He does not need to be a part of the conversation. He just needs to
sign. He's playing a different game. He just basically stokes the fires.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to this.
And that's it. I actually want to, we'll come to this. I wanted to highlight about this because I know we got like a couple more minutes, but
yeah.
Those are the main three things, but yeah, essentially keeping Trump out of it, getting the Attorney General of the United States as a part of this. Congress needs to be discuss this, and yeah, this should be a federal issue. These are state agents. If you want to talk about federal supremacy and the supremacy clause, states need to be reprimanded, or state agents like police need to be reprimanded when they supersede your rights. So we need to have that conversation on a federal level. So come on, federal government, do your job. Okay. So the FBI might need to be involved in this, only because they're going to have to investigate state police when things like this go down. There are probably other things that might come up. You might have lawyers, a team of lawyers coming together and proposing something, some kind of case against these kind of killings. And, you might get something that goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court might make a decision that will trickle down in the next coming years, but who knows? Taking the judicial route, I think, is the longest way to take.
Okay. Do you have any leaders in mind that you think could lead this charge? Any good candidates?
Right now, who's a Democrat? Right now, this is a prime time for a Democratic nominee, a former Democratic nominee, to really make a name. And this is Kamala Harris. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of her politics, but she has the experience.
Very interesting call. Yeah.
She has the experience.
She could blow up to the top if she actually.
Yep. And that's the thing. Right. And I'm only thinking about it in terms of like who has the most experience in this. And it's her. And I think that's the only person I can think of.
And also she's a black woman.
Right. And this could propel her into the stratosphere in a sense.
So
she's
true.
She's probably one of the few people that I think on the Democratic side who could propel themselves as a leader. I can't think of anybody else who would be able to rally people on a scale like this.
Yeah, that's a really prime one. If she was smart.
Yeah. If she was smart. I think she is, but I think she's a little scarred. I think she took it personal whenever people were attacking her criminal justice record of locking up Black Americans for like shitty things like weed possession and stuff like that, which is like fair, but it comes with the territory.
Fair.
Well, it comes. And no, I'm saying it's fair in the sense to be you are going to be criticized.
Oh yeah,
you're
yeah,
a public
yeah.
figure.
Yeah,
you have to take it on the chin, lady. You can't just like
can't fold.
You can't fold. You know, but who knows? This is why I'm like, she might be a good person to.
This could be her redemption arc.
It could be. But she's got to learn to take. She's got to learn to just like take it as it comes, or take it in stride. Because you could see, sometimes it was wearing on her that people were questioning her because she did some things that were probably not conscionable, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you have anybody in mind who would be like a good who would be good intellectual leaders in this time? Anybody that you can think of?
So I saw an impressive video by Killer Mike that I actually shared on our Twitter. Uh-huh. He addressed the issue and it was very well done. I don't know if he's necessarily the perfect person for it because, you know, he's a rapper. He's not
he's a cultural figure.
He's a cultural figure. He's not his full-time job is not an activist. Mm-hmm. He's probably an activist on the side, but that's not his job. So for me, I would say, and for people out there who are watching, I would say we need to get the NAACP to start making some big moves. Like I want to see the NAACP actually leading the charge at all of these protests. I want to see them actually speaking about the protests. I want to see them running hashtags about the plan if that's easily digestible. I want to see the NAACP actually taking the reins on this one and propping up their leaders and saying, we have the plan. This is what we want to do. You know, we have the organizations. We have the means to do it. Let's see some actual action from the NAACP. That's who I want to call out and see what are you guys doing about this. I don't see anything about them. Of course, you know, they could be doing things, but like if they were actually hammering this thing full force, I should be seeing them everywhere. And so far I'm not hearing anything or seeing anything from them. So I want to see some bigger moves and bigger steps by the NAACP.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you 100%. Just seeing them come out and at least forming a cohesive, like you're saying, plan of action. And
there needs to be a coherent and succinct narrative of what needs to be done, which I'm not seeing anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's it, right?
So, yeah, one more thing, though.
Yeah.
You kind of gave me a good, like, impression of what kind of person Trump is. You're saying... Oh, yeah. You're saying you feel like you figured him out.
Yeah, I don't think this is really that new. You know, people have been calling him this for years, but I've just really have noticed lately the solid indicators that this is pretty much the truth. Trump truly lives in a reality TV show. His whole life is based around ratings and attention. So the thing is, what is a reality TV show type or star like? They like controversy. They like attention. They like reverence. They like any kind of attention, good or bad. They're trying to make a compelling story. So Trump is giving you the best reality television version of America season ever. So what you guys got to realize is death to a reality TV show star is no attention. Trump needs to stop getting attention. He's proven time and time again that he's not here to make good moves. He's not here to help a situation. All he's trying to do is get ratings. And that is his mode of operation. So Trump needs to be, people need to stop talking about Trump, stop propping up his thing, stop being outraged by Trump, ignore him. When he's ignored, that's when he dies. You do not feed the troll. That's the classic adage of the internet. Don't feed the troll. Trump is just, that is what he does. He's a reality TV show host or star. If you guys watch all of his moves, actually I was saying to one, I was like, I was actually saying to Juan, probabilistically, the reason I could come up to the conclusion that Trump is just operating within a different framework is because he literally does all of the wrong things. There's very few people that I know that I see them and I say they're doing all the wrong shit. Like literally everything they do, I cannot agree with. That's a rare feat. At least with someone I don't like, at least they do some things occasionally that I do say I agree with that. So that means to me, Trump must be operating in a completely different framework. And I think, and that's what he is. He's operating in, he's trying to get ratings. So if he does something wrong, he knows that that's the way to go for his framework of thinking or operating is because it's going to generate the most ratings. It's going to get the most controversy. It's going to get the biggest upset. He's basically giving people a drama in real life. He's making America into a drama show. So ignore Trump, stop giving him attention, and then he will go away or he will stop. But of course, it won't happen because people are always going to give him attention because they don't realize this. But attention feeds Trump. That's what he loves. So at least if you guys, a small community of people that watch us, don't give Trump attention, please.
Yeah. Try not to engage the troll.
Yeah. So as best as we can, leave Trump out of the conversation. He's not in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's counterproductive to what we're trying to do. We're actually trying to accomplish real life things, despite what Trump may want. Life is not a TV show. Life is real. You know, we actually need to do real things to make real change. We can't live like it's a drama.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that, I think that's a good way to kind of end the message, just because he's more of a saboteur.
You know,
he's more of an agent of chaos.
Yeah. He's an agent of chaos.
He's going to dramatize things.
He's going to do the thing that gives the biggest reaction, the biggest, just the biggest spectacle. That's what he does.
Because, in fact, I have my boss, he gets caught up in this, the persona of Trump.
Yeah.
He takes up a lot of real estate in a lot of people's minds, and I don't let him get to me because I know he's a troll.
Yeah. That's like, why Trump is winning, because if you have his attention, he's winning.
He's like a child who's throwing a tantrum, and he's going to try to escalate things to try to get more and more attention, when you can just, you know, you can be like, why do we have to include them in?
Yeah.
Like, he's an adult, obviously.
You don't need him.
He's not
a part of the equation.
He can literally, like, he's a part of the equation up until a bill is signed. But at that point, if he will do whatever will make him more popular. And that's really all you need to know. He cares, like you're saying, about rating. He cares about
popularity.
Popularity
is very subjective, right? Because he can be popular with his base and he'll do things for them.
Right. But he'll, overall, he's obsessed with his ratings. He's obsessed with getting credit. His egoism.
Popular in this sense means attention.
Yeah.
He just wants to be in people's mouths and their minds.
Yeah.
If it's bad or good, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's popularity to Trump. He wants to be known and always thought about.
Yeah. Sure, he'll stomp his feet. He'll probably say something about it. But at the end of the day, if there's a bill that comes to the front of his desk and it's asking to end, you know, things like, you know, investigate or use a standard of national standard of force or something, he will probably sign it.
I won't say
he
that.
Might. He might.
I think that's a little bit of
no. But I'm saying stretch. He might stomp his feet, like he might be like, you know, just the Democrats are going to blah blah blah. Like he might make it a spectacle, but at the end of the day, he's probably going to sign that.
I'm not going to say any of that because Trump does unprecedented things. But you know, as much as we can disclude him from the equation, we should. That's all I'll say.
But sure, I would tend to agree with you on that. So. Or I would agree with you on that.
All right. Is that it, Juan?
I think so,
past, so.
Yeah. Sorry if the quality changed halfway through. Just because, well, for one, we had somebody mowing a lawn, and then we also had my laptop crash. So that wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Anyway. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening. Please comment off in the sec. Comment off. Whatever, we'll cut this anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We'll do a proper outro and intro.
All right, we'll see you guys in outro.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
For sticking around this long. We just want to reiterate, you know, please follow our socials, Twitter.
Twitter is @EigenBros, Instagram @EigenBros, We've got the TikTok, Eigenbros 2, and then, of course, the website, eigenbros.com.
Yeah, please leave a comment, like, share, subscribe, all that stuff. You know, have a comment in a dialogue or on Twitter. We're pretty active on Twitter, too, so just hit us up there.
And just for the comments, guys, let us know what do you think are some actionable plans that can be put into place to solve this issue. Mm-hmm. What do you think that we can do that's pragmatic with a high return that we can do to remedy this?
Mm-hmm.
And just leave it in the comments below.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Yep.